the beaches are closed to stop the spread of COVID-19. Not everyone is happy about that. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a look at the effort to reopen our First Coast beaches. What do you think about that? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, how you can enjoy a little bit of wild Florida and hopefully calm your nerves during this pandemic. But first, here's the latest on coronavirus. Florida's total positive test count climbed overnight to 13,629. Deaths are at 254 around the state. In Northeast Florida, we have 759 positive cases, but a bit of good news, the death toll remains at 18 locally. Now, the Jacksonville City Council unanimously approved a bill Monday to open a city small business relief program. This is in partnership with Vistar Credit Union. Vistar is opening up a $50 million pool of money specifically for small businesses with 2 to 100 employees eligible to apply for a loan of up to $100,000. We'll continue to cover that development on this program and on 89.9. Meanwhile, the fight over sand, sea, and sun continues in Northeast Florida and Southeast Georgia. Multiple organized efforts have advocated for the reopening of beaches throughout the region since closures began due to the coronavirus outbreak. We need to note that Jacksonville Beach, despite efforts to open it up, is staying closed for the time being. However, petitioners in St. Johns County are still trying to get their beaches reopened. We're going to speak to some of these petitioners right now. Greg Mattson of Fort Caroline started a petition asking Governor Ron DeSantis to make surfing an essential activity in the state. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for being with us. Also on the line, Chris Tincher of St. Augustine. He co-wrote another petition asking St. John's County government officials to reopen that county's beaches to residents on a limited basis. Chris, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having us on.
Lots of calls already about this. We'll get to them in a moment. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaNJax, and our Facebook page is open. All right, let's begin with the petition you sent the governor, Greg. You are arguing that surfing should be an essential activity. Why?
I think it's important that we all have some kind of semblance of normalcy in these crazy times. I think that for a lot of people who live on the First Coast and in Florida in general, going to the beach and being active is part of their everyday routine. And with so many people at home now and being taken out of so many other normal activities, I think it's important that those of us who go to the beach for exercise regularly still have that option available to us.
And Chris, you have put out a petition asking St. John's County, that county commission, to reopen area beaches on a limited basis. They will apparently vote on this today. What's your rationale for this, given that all of the health experts that have been pleading for people to stay home and socially distance say that anytime you congregate with more than a few people in public, you're spreading the virus?
So for our reasons for the petition, we are asking for socially distanced movement activities on the beach, such as jogging, walking, surfing, recreational activities. Our petition is pleading with local government to give us this opportunity, as counties such as Volusia is currently doing right now, so is Brevard. These activities in Governor DeSantis's...
Let me just be clear. Volusia and Brevard counties are allowing limited beach access, correct?
Yes, ma'am. For movement and physical activity, such as surfing, swimming, jogging, walking, all of these things have a natural social distance parameter to them, and some of these activities were listed as essential by Governor DeSantis. So we're asking to be able to use the beaches responsibly and socially distance. For a lot of us, you know, surfers, that is our form of exercise. It's our form of stress relief. And with surfing, there is a natural stay 10 feet away from each other presence there. We don't want to have big groups or gatherings on the beach. We would just like to access the ocean, ride waves for mental and physical health, and then come right in and go home.
Okay, Greg, you're making the same argument with your petition to the governor, and you've pointed out that another sport, golf, has been classified as essential, but your sport, surfing, has not. That said, what would you say to those listening to this who think you're being selfish? Why can't you just wait a month or two until this crisis has passed? Why take the risk?
Well, I'd like to start by saying for golf with me, I mean, it's not so different from surfing. Most of the time I end up in the water anyways. But I think that the reason, what I would say to people who are hesitant to have the beaches open, it's not something that we want to be us versus them. I don't want it to be people who want to have the beach versus people who want to have golf open. I think if we're going to promote exercise and if we're going to tell people we want you out socially distanced at safe distances from each other, being in the water at the beach or walking along the beach is not much different from being told you can walk your dog through your neighborhood or that you can go for a bike ride. It's just we're asking that we be allowed to do that in, for some of us, our backyard. A lot of people who live on the beaches are being told they can't use those outlets to find that sense of normalcy that they had and find that relaxation and exercise. And I think having golf courses open and available to people should still be allowed. I don't think we need more restrictions. I think we just need safe and sensible regulations that we can work with our government officials on coming agreement to. I think that for those of us who want to be at the beach and feel that we need to be at the beach, this is a very important issue that's weighing heavily on a lot of us. For those of us who have a routine of going to the beach 4 or 5 times a day, to be told now you're not allowed to do that, even though while we're there, we are maintaining safe distances from each other, is kind of confusing when we're seeing other activities still be allowed.
Chris Tincher on the line from St. Augustine. When the beaches were closed locally, police and the mayor, other officials pointed out that at high tide, it's impossible to maintain social distancing and that people were clumping up in groups. If the beaches were to be reopened, how on earth could you possibly make sure that people maintain social distancing?
So we're asking for the beaches to be open. In our petition, it said for limited hours, from 7 until 11 o'clock. With the high tide argument, we're not asking and we're not advocating that anyone go to the beach and just sit on the beach or congregate in groups on the beach. For those of us who want to go surfing at high tide, we can simply access the ocean and paddle out there and be able to surf. There wouldn't be any groupings. We would be sitting 10, 15 feet apart from each other. For walkers and joggers that want to access the beach, they would need to do that at a lower tide so that it was available there. The limited hours would keep some of these crowds away because some of the pictures that we saw on the internet of those huge crowds were, number one, a lot of spring break going on, and number two, people wanting to come and just sit and gather socially on the beach. We're asking for this to be opened as exercise and for physical and mental health. So for the high tide argument, the walkers and joggers and dog walkers would either need to walk through the ankle deep water, like many people do, or wait for a lower tide to do those things. But
all
we are
right.
Not advocating any groupings, so like you've seen in those pictures on the beach.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to some calls. Lots of calls on this. It is a hot topic. We'll get to your emails and tweets and Facebook comments in a moment. As two local surfers petition St. Johns County and also the governor to open the beaches, open St. Johns County beaches, I should say, and declare surfing an essential activity. What do you think about that? It's 549-2937. Stin is in South Jacksonville. Stin, good morning. Is that your name?
Stin. Yeah, just like Stan, except with an I.
Gotcha. What are your thoughts?
The governor, I sort of agree with all the arguments, but specifically for the surfers, the governor's order specifically allowed the use of small boats, kayaks, canoes, other boats, and left the boat ramps open because it makes real good sense for people to be out by themselves in a kayak on the water. They're about as socially isolated as could be. The surfers just ought to claim that their surfboards are watercraft and that they're just using the beach as a boat ramp to get to the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're there's nothing in the governor's order. In fact, the governor's order permits that.
All right, Sten.
With that interpretation.
Thanks for that. I don't know if the police would allow it, but Greg Mattson, do you consider your surfboard a watercraft?
I consider using the beach the same way that someone would use a boat ramp. In the petition that I wrote, we're not asking for congregation on the beach in any way. We are asking just for access to the sand to get to the water. So I do agree with that argument that we should be able to use it the same way as someone's using a boat ramp. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a watercraft, but I do agree with what he's saying. Yeah, we're not asking to be able to congregate on the beach. We just want to use the sand to get from our cars or our backyards to the water and then back from the water to those places.
Daryl is in St. Augustine. Hey, Daryl, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I agree with everything everybody has said. Two guys in a golf cart, I've seen. I've never seen two guys on a surfboard. The idea that our officers cannot ask any group of 10, which is very, very rare, which is the CDC rules, to separate or leave the beach is vastly underestimating the professionalism of the St. Johns County Sheriff's Office. They handle rapes, they handle murders, they handle 4th of July, they handle everything.
Well, yeah, Daryl, I don't think anyone's trying to do that. That said, did you see the picture that was widely circulated showing crowds on the St. Johns County Beach right there at the county line, and the Duval Beach was closed?
Right.
I think that really got a lot of concern.
That's exactly right. That the politicians are responding to the press. So Rick Scott got in there because there were pictures on CNN of spring breakers. We got our beaches closed because Duval did not coordinate with St. John's, and so you had this influx. The second thing is, by closing the beach to driving, you literally forced everybody together. Because I don't know about you, but if you're carrying a cooler, an umbrella, a chair, and you've got two kids, when you can't drive and separate yourself, you're going to drop that cooler right next to each other. So by closing all of the parking and closing all of the driving, you forced everybody into doing exactly what that picture said and exactly what we're not should not have.
All right, Daryl. So, thanks, Daryl. That's Daryl in St. Augustine. I'm going to get a few more calls on, and then we'll go back to our petitioners. Jim is in Riverside. Good morning, Jim. What are your thoughts about this?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, this is Jim Alaviso with Duval Ocean Swimmers.
Hey, how you doing?
And doing well, Melissa. Good to hear your voice.
You too.
We have our a group. This group has been around for over 40 years, and we're basically open water swimmers, and we swim a couple of miles up and down the coast several days a week, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, sunrise, first light. And, you know, this is our passion, and sorry, I'm out of breath. I just got out of Publix.
I hope you socially distanced and wore a mask or took special precautions when you went in there. Yeah.
Well, I did. And, you know, they have the lines in there now, so it keeps the people separate from the, when you're going through the cashier. We were rather disappointed when we couldn't swim. And when they closed the Jacksonville Beach, we moved down to St. Johns County. But we stayed our 6 feet apart, and it's a rather individual sport. We're all swimming, but we're all quite separated in the water.
So I guess then you agree with these guys. You'd like to see a partial reopening of the beaches, Jim?
Yeah, I would. You know, the only problem I see with it is enforcement. You know, we have such, great volunteers. We got volunteers, our fire department, our police, and I don't know, where they're going to get the time to enforce it.
Yeah, that's a valid concern, and I appreciate you pointing that out. We'll get to that in a minute. That's Jim Alaviso in Riverside, Duval Ocean Swimmers. And thank you for the call, Jim. I want to get a few more folks on. Misty is in Atlantic Beach. Misty, go ahead.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that
Yeah, go ahead, yeah. Misty. Go ahead.
Yes, in Atlantic Beach, they have closed the beaches, of course, and no one can walk, bike, walk their dog or anything. So now Beach Avenue, which is the street right beside the beach, has become what we call COVID Alley, where people are walking, biking, hanging out with their children. I mean, it's very hard to social distance when everybody is walking their dog down that street.
I've seen video of that, and people are definitely crowding that walkway and that street, and not far enough apart by any means. So you're right about that, Misty, and I appreciate the call. Okay, so thank you, Misty. And lots of tweets and emails coming into the show about this. Mary says, in a time of crisis, people need to be socially responsible. We all have to give up something for the greater good, whether that's surfing or another sport. It's time to be responsible, not risk-taking, as we try to rid the world of this virus. That's an email from a listener, and we have a lot of tweets. Here are just a couple. Ryan says, there's no other way to describe this other than being selfish and naive. It's not pleasant to isolate, but we are all making sacrifices. People are dying. You not going to the beach for a few weeks isn't asking for much. He says, this will only get worse if we reopen the beaches. Thousands more people will be infected. People need to have some compassion and focus on the community's health for a few months. Okay, so Chris Tincher of St. Augustine, critics of your move, you and Greg, to petition to open the beaches think you're being really selfish. What's your response to that?
So for Greg and I, there are people that have that opinion, and there's widely varying opinions on this. The petition that we started a little over a week ago has 10,000 beach residents in support of this. And I think when people say we're being selfish, they're saying it because we are wanting to have access, and they're saying, well, make the sacrifice. However, it's like one of your callers just said, people are still walking their dogs, they're jogging, they can't just be locked indoors. That's not good for your mental health. It's not good for anything. And so without people in beach neighborhoods being able to have some kind of access to do these things, they're doing them on streets, in traffic. It's crowding those streets. And for surfers, that's our form of exercise and our form of stress relief. So if we're only asking for 3 hours to be able to do that socially distant and being responsible, I don't see it as selfish. I see it as sensible and safe.
Okay. Greg Mattson of Fort Caroline, we received an earlier call talking about how do you properly enforce this? Here's a comment on our Facebook page from Nancy. How will resources, police, be used to police the beach? It's clear from what happened in St. John's County that citizens won't police themselves. How do you properly enforce this?
So I think the resources are already there to enforce this. We already have police making sure people aren't going on the beach at all. I think it's easily recognizable to tell when somebody is on the beach exercising, using safe social distance practices, as opposed to somebody going out with a cooler and an umbrella. And that's, like I said, that's not what we're asking for. We're asking to have it open for exercise. I think that having police there or whoever we decide to have there to regulate is still needed, but I think it'll be needed on a smaller scale. Right now we have officers who are patrolling beach access, and that's pulling a lot of resources that could be used other places, whereas if we had access to the beach, you wouldn't have to police these access points. You would just have to police and make sure that the people who are using the beach for exercise are actually using it for that.
We've got Steve on the line from Jack's Beach. He says he's a lifeguard there. Hey, Steve, how are you today?
Very well.
So what are your, as a lifeguard, what's your opinion on this?
We know from experience that there will be thousands of people ready to come onto the beach, and the amount of resources it takes to maintain the closure is small compared to the many times that will be required to even come close to enforce, as they're doing in Volusia and Brevard County right now. The resources don't exist to get the many thousands of the public that are ready to come onto the beach to conform to the guidelines. We do know from experience how people behave, and we know that it'll be a near impossible task to make sure that everyone on the beach is actually exercising and not abusing this loosening up of the rules.
So by your comments, it sounds like you believe the beaches need to stay closed for the time being.
Well, the thing that I don't think everybody's considering is that all these police and first responders will then be required to make thousands of contacts, direct contacts, where they'll be almost certainly exposed to people who aren't being careful and who are possibly infected.
Okay, so are you? What are you doing now that you can't be out there lifeguarding? How are you passing the time?
Working at home, doing other things, doing schoolwork.
All right, Steve. That's Steve, a lifeguard out at Jack's Beach. Thanks for the call. So, Chris and Greg, where do you go with your petition efforts from here?
So,
Chris, you can go ahead and take that first, yeah.
Okay. So from here, our movement has really become a St. John's County resident movement, you know? And in St. John's, we are a lot smaller than Duval County. So as far as our resources go to enforce things, our beach would not have to have, especially in the southern part of the county, all of those people. We could easily do it with beach cruisers going up and down the beach, loud phones, especially with our petition. If it's open from 7 to 11, it eliminates a lot of those things. Our next steps, there were some beach residents who signed the petition who were out on their street. They were 10, 15 feet apart from each other with signs saying, please open the beaches. My two co-authors of the petition, Eric Hires and Chris Rapero, are speaking with our county commissioners. And in St. John's County, something amazing is happening. We've had several conversations with the chief of St. Augustine Police, Mr. Hardwick. He's amazing. His troops do such a good job. We're speaking with our county commissioners, and we're trying to create a sensible solution to keep everybody safe. So like Greg said before, in St. John's County, we're having this big dialogue between residents and government leadership, and it has gone very well, and we're supporting each other. And the hashtag that we're kind of using is safety plus sanity, sensible and safe. And those are what we're working towards. And like I said, St. John's, we're a smaller county like Brevard and Volusia. I think that we could put in these kind of things in our county.
And the St. John's County Commission is taking this up today, is that right?
The St. John's County Commission is having a meeting. They are discussing the possibility, and two of the petition authors are there, and hopefully they'll have their chance to speak directly with the County Commission. We've been very supported by our local government.
Okay, and Greg of Fort Caroline, any response yet from Governor DeSantis about your statewide petition?
I have not gotten any response. I'm looking forward to one. I would love to have a conversation with him about it. I think it's important for us in Duval County. Our next step is going to be, I think, mirroring what St. John's has been doing. If I'm being completely honest, I was not expecting this petition to get so much support so quickly. I only wrote it on Friday night, and it has over 10,000 signatures. So I think we're probably going to need to follow in the footsteps that those in St. John's and other counties have been doing and taking it more locally as well. My concern is I don't want just Jacksonville beaches to be opened. I think that it's more important that we have all of the beaches accessible in Florida for movement and exercise, because if we only had Jacksonville Beach opened, we would see the same issues that we had a couple weeks ago when Jacksonville was closed and St. John's County beaches were open, and we did have those crowding of the beaches, those pictures showing Duval residents just crossing the county line and going and crowding other beaches. Whereas if all of the beaches in Florida had the same regulations, and whether that's limited hours and just for movement, I think that that would keep people in their immediate neighborhoods and prevent overcrowding due to travel to try to get to beaches that are open while others are closed. So I'm looking forward to having a meeting, hopefully with Governor DeSantis, but I haven't had any response
All
from
right.
him or his office yet.
Greg Mattson calling in from Fort Caroline, Chris Tincher down in St. Augustine. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks, guys. Up next, how telemedicine is helping thousands in our area get tested for COVID-19. We'll be right back.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the telemedicine company Telescope Health is the fast-growing virtual platform helping thousands of local patients get screened for COVID-19. I spoke with the founders of the company about how this screening process works and the growth of telemedicine in the midst of a pandemic. Let's listen. Dr. Matthew Rill and Dr. Matthew Thompson, the co-founders of Telescope Health, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, we're happy to be here.
Good to have you. So tell us a little bit more about the role of Telescope Health in conducting the more than 1,500 tests of local patients in Jacksonville who've been screened in the last week or so for COVID-19. What's your role?
Hey, Melissa, this is Matt Rill. We're really grateful that we could offer this service to the community. Testing for COVID-19 is really vital to understanding the prevalence of this highly contagious disease in Jacksonville. And the test results are important for a few reasons. One, they certainly help each patient better understand their own illness, but they also provide important information so that systems can plan accordingly to meet the health needs of the whole community as we expect this illness to get worse over the next few weeks. We hope that having the test results will help us understand if we're flattening the curve. Telescope Health started off as a more of a high-touch concierge service. We were seeing patients every day and helping them with both urgent care needs as well as helping them with care coordination after the visit. We had to pivot that response when COVID hit, and we've been happy to be able to ramp up operations to support that.
Right. And we've heard your name, your brand name mentioned a lot for people seeking the tests that they interact with Telescope Health. How do you help process the tests?
So when a patient calls into Telescope Health, they see a provider. Most of these providers are from our ERG team and Telescope team that work in our emergency departments. They get screened to see who meets criteria for testing, which is based on CDC guidelines. Once they're deemed necessary for testing, they get an appointment, which most days is the same day today, and then we see them at the site itself. They get a nasal or oral swab, and then it should be done in between 5 and 15 minutes on site, and then we wait for test results.
And this is virtual medicine that you've offered a lot of people in a really quick turnaround. That's got to be challenging, I would think.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, we were much more of a high-touch service, low volume. And after about the third day after we went live with this project, we had an obvious pattern. Visits were doubling each day. I'm really lucky to have an awesome leadership team within our group. And really through their tireless efforts, within a few days, we recruited 200 new providers to Telescope. And we're able to effectively reduce the wait times to under 10 minutes. And we see about 250 patients a day now.
Wow. So obviously telemedicine is on the rise in this era of social distancing. What's the future for this sector of the healthcare field, do you think, after we get through this crisis?
Hey, Melissa, this is Matt Thompson. We've thought about this a lot, and as we've seen people stuck in their homes and finding new ways to access healthcare and find convenient ways to use just anything virtually, we think this is going to be a big shifting point in medicine. What people are realizing now, because they have to realize it, is that they can gain peace of mind and access to see a provider or a physician without leaving their house. And I think most people knew what telemedicine was or had heard that term, but they've never had any first-person exposure to it. And so, now everybody is wanting to stay quarantined, to stay in this self-isolating mode.
and they can hop on their phone and gain that peace of mind and see a provider and get navigation through their healthcare services that they need pretty easily. I mean, our service right now, the intake form, you can be online seeing a provider within 5 minutes. And that's somebody that works in the emergency departments locally that you would see if you were to go and sit in a waiting room. And, you know, right now it's a great service also because, you know, people otherwise would be sitting in a waiting room and maybe exposing themselves to someone else who was contagious.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anything that can be done now to keep people out of those waiting rooms is what we need to be doing. And they're advising people don't go to the emergency room unless you're really seriously having trouble breathing. If at all possible, be treated virtually and stay home. So what's the feedback you're getting from your patients in the midst of all this about how they interact with you?
Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that patients often, and people, we don't often know, unless you're a trained healthcare provider, you don't often know, are my symptoms serious or not? And that's, you know, as an emergency physician, you know, we're trained to look at people's symptoms and to rule out emergencies. But, you know, as somebody who's not trained, you don't know if what you're experiencing is serious or if it's not serious. And so, you know, the nice thing about Telescope Health is that you will talk to a provider right off the bat who can listen to your symptoms and determine if you need to see somebody, you know, right away in an emergency room. But that's a nice, we're a nice gatekeeper and a nice first resource because it's so easy to use. But, you know, oftentimes, you know, we have people who are just shocked at how easy it was for them to download the app and log in and see somebody so quickly.
Well, that's good news. And I appreciate you. That's good to hear. And I appreciate you both bringing us up to date on this. They are Dr. Matthew Rill and Dr. Matthew Thompson, the co-founders of Telescope Health. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Well, the current safer at home orders much of the nation is living under right now are meant to, yeah, keep us all safe. But if you're living with an abusive partner, being stuck at home can be a dangerous situation. Domestic violence is spiking right now. How can we help people that are vulnerable? On the line with more, we welcome Joyce Marr, CEO of the Betty Griffin Center in St. Johns County. Good morning, Joyce.
Good morning. How are you, Melissa?
Good, thanks. Also with us in Jacksonville, Teresa Miles, Executive Director of the Women's Center of JAX. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks for having us.
Now, April is National Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and COVID-19, of course, has sent us all into our homes. So, Teresa, let's begin with you. Are you seeing an increase in calls to your crisis hotline since this whole saga began?
You know, it's interesting right now, Melissa. We had seen about an 8% increase in our calls from this point last year. But I would say within the last almost week and a half, we've seen a decrease in the calls coming into our hotline and certainly a decrease in the number of forensic exams, which...
Well, that's good news.
We want it to be really great news. Our concern, Melissa, is that, you know, folks are being discouraged from going into the emergency rooms right now for fear of the COVID.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so the numbers may be a bit muddied up. Okay. Joyce Marr, that's a concern you have at Betty Griffin Center in St. Johns County. You're providing support, counseling, but now that victims are ordered to stay in place, it might be harder to identify who's at risk. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, it's safer at home, but victims of domestic violence and even sexual assault, it's not. And we have seen a decline in our hotline calls. We're still receiving some, but not as many as we usually do, and that's typically because if the abuser is home, you know, it's not safe for them to reach out to a hotline and call.
Yeah. Teresa, if you're in an abusive situation before this began, women in particular, but sometimes men are also at risk, You could always leave your house if you felt that it was dangerous. That's not an option right now for millions of people.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely correct. They are at home, and oftentimes, you know, they're there with the people who are hurting them the most, which should never be the case in our homes. So we certainly worry about those individuals tremendously, and we hope that they're finding ways through family and friends to reach out if they're not able to get to our numbers through a hotline.
Joyce, you wanted to make this point, too, that if you're concerned about a friend or a neighbor, to keep an eye out for anything that you think might be a little off and call the Betty Griffin Center if you think someone needs help. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Well, you know, what we have information on our website. We have information that could go to our Facebook page. Those are some of the things that, you know, victims could do, but also neighbors if they're concerned. But, you know, also for neighbors, if you hear something and you are fearful, call 911. Law enforcement is still responding to domestic violence calls. And now it's even more important for neighbors to help neighbors to reach out and to be vigilant because, you know, they may be saving a life. And so don't be afraid to call 911 if you need to do that.
Sure. And Teresa, tell us a little bit more about the Women's Center of Jacksonville. As we noted, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and the work you do really focuses on supporting victims of sexual assault.
Yeah, absolutely. So with it being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we typically have a lot of activities and events throughout the month. And unfortunately, we've had to either cancel those or take them virtual. So we really would encourage folks to go to our Facebook platform, our Instagram, our Twitter account, so that they can kind of keep up with what we're doing in the realm of keeping people aware of sexual assaults, particularly now when people are more isolated and not in the community as much, to be able to maybe witness it or talk to friends about it. So, and our hotline, of course, 904-721-7273. We are there. You know, our folks are still on the front line. We're still responding to the forensic exam calls. We are still, you know, taking calls from survivors, and we're also doing remote therapy. We have a secure platform set up so we can do counseling with survivors during this time.
Sure.
So we're continuing.
Still doing the work. Yeah. And Joyce, at Betty Griffin Center, it's the same story. How does an agency like yours work in this current situation that we're dealing with?
Well, currently, you know, we're still taking hotline calls. We are a dual center, so we're also helping with forensic exams. So if any, you know, victim needs or wants a forensic exam, just call our hotline and we'll make sure that that happens. We're doing, we're still providing services that may be a little different. It's remotely. We're still doing counseling remotely. We're doing our advocacy the same way remotely. You know, we're there for the community. You know, and so just reach out to our hotline number, which is 824-1555, and there's someone there that can connect you with the right person. Either it's our legal services, our counseling services, or our advocacy services. We're still open for services, and we want anyone that needs our help to reach out to us through our hotline, and we will connect you to the right source.
Okay, and at the Women's Center of Jax, Teresa, it's the same story. People can call your hotline 24 hours a day. You have nurses on call to help survivors. How do you treat someone, though, in a way that's safe so that infection isn't spread?
You know, Melissa, it's much like the hospitals right now. All of our nursing staff have full PPEs. They have masks. They have gloves. They have, you know, things over their clothing. We are completely adhering to the proper protection equipment for our staff as well as the people that we're serving. So our distinction right now is we have our standalone center, as you know, that we can have folks come to us if they do not have an urgent medical need, and we can see them in a center away from a hospital.
Mm-hmm. And with your nursing staff, are they having any issues with shortage of what is known as PPE, personal protective equipment, or are you covered there?
Right now we are covered, and just like with others in the healthcare professions, we have had some really kindness in our community where people have sewn masks. So in order to, you know, make our masks last, we have taken those handcrafted ones to wear on top of the masks as well in the event we get in a situation where we need that. But we had ordered ahead of time, and we also had some real kindness from a dentist in our community who donated some protection equipment. So we are doing okay right now.
Oh, that's good to hear. Now, let me ask both of you, beginning with you, Joyce, at Betty Griffin Center. Nonprofits across the country are being hit hard by this economic crisis, and they need support. That is no different for you guys. How can people support, let's begin with the Betty Griffin Center in St. Johns County?
Well, I can tell you, we have two thrift stores that really help support a large portion of our operating income. And because we have closed those stores, any monetary donation would be extremely helpful at this time. You know, we've got additional expenses that we're having to pay with, you know, supplies that we're trying to purchase, cleaning supplies. We've have upped our professional cleaning at the shelter, so that's an additional cost. And I will say that our shelter staff is on the front lines. They're providing service there every day, and we're trying to accommodate additional staff, you know, to help them as much as possible, because they're there with survivors in the shelter every day, making sure that they're staying safe. And so we just have a lot of gratitude for them.
Absolutely. And Teresa, the Women's Center of JAX, tell us your situation and how people can support your efforts.
Yes, certainly. So during Sexual Assault Awareness Month is typically when we see a real increase in our contributions, and that's something that we count on each year to be able to continue to serve survivors of sexual assault. And unfortunately, just with the times, we're not seeing that increase. So I would really encourage folks to, again, you know, monitor our social media, particularly our Facebook, which will give opportunities for folks. We're doing a virtual kickball tournament right now.
Yeah.
Every year we kick off the season with a tournament between us, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, state attorneys. We actually have a true kickball tournament, and people vote on their fan favorite for that particular event. And we've taken that virtual, so folks can go onto our website and they can vote on the team that they would like to see take home the fan favorite trophy, and that is with a contribution. So that's a way that we've been earning money every year that is no longer you know, available to us in person, so we're taking that virtual. And, you know, just continue with the generosity if possible. We've had some amazing people support us over the years. And, you know, and if you can, please continue to. You know, as Joyce mentioned, our folks are on the front line. We're out there. We're not going to slow down. We're not going to stop helping people. So we certainly need the help of our community at this time.
Absolutely. Do what you can to support the Betty Griffin Center. Joyce Marr is the CEO there in St. Johns County, and Teresa Miles, Executive Director of the Women's Center of Jacksonville. Thanks so much to you both.
Thank you, Melissa, for having us.
Sure. And when we come back, some ideas on enjoying a little taste of wild Florida, even in the middle of a pandemic. That's next.
Pandemic has stopped economic growth, but there is a certain kind of growth the virus cannot touch.
The plants don't really care that the rest of the economy is shut down.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. How our apple and hops farmer is faring in this economy. Next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Marco Werman. At The World, we're always looking beyond our borders to get the global take on the news. That's especially important as we deal with a pandemic. We take you to places where the coronavirus struck first, places that may recover from its effects before the U.S. Join us as we take on each day's news from a global perspective. That's why we call it The World. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Are you bored with your own cooking yet? On the next Fresh Air, we talk about cooking at a time of social isolation with Sam Sifton of the New York Times. He's been the paper's restaurant critic, its food editor, and he's now writing about how to make interesting dishes with whatever you find in your kitchen. He has a new cookbook called See You on Sunday. Join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Nursing homes care for more than a million Americans, and the pandemic is pushing many to a breaking point. Susan, a nurse in Illinois, called us to say that from what she's seen so far, many nursing homes can't cope.
Get our nursing staff, everybody, they need to be wearing masks.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, protecting those most at risk, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, that is what you call nature's first symphony, the relaxing sounds of birdsong. Isn't that cool? I feel less stressed already. Hey, one easy way to lower our stress amid this pandemic, in fact, one of the only ways we have right now, is to enjoy nature. But you might be wondering, how do we do that if most parks are closed and we have to be very careful about social distancing? Well, master naturalist Lisa Gruba is on the line with some ideas for you. It's today's Wild Florida. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. Good to hear your voice. Now, you've been reporting on some great places we can get out and hike in this area, and I know that you get out and scout every location before each show. So tell me, what's it like out there now that so many parks are closed? Are you cooped up at home too?
Well, to my surprise, I'm actually outdoors more now than I was before. I'm just doing it closer to home, and I'm in my yard and in my neighborhood. I now start my day and end my work day outside in my yard or biking in my neighborhood, unplugged, and it has been a huge stress buster for me. I've been paying more attention to the birds as I'm out there, and the birds are just singing like crazy this time of year. And it turns out that it's actually peak season for birdsong. I didn't realize that there was a season, but there is. Now through April and even into May, we're still going to be hearing the birds calling, partially because it's mating season. So they are talking to each other and trying to attract a mate. And for some of them, their plumage is brighter right now, so they're even easier to spot in the trees.
Oh.
So birding has become a new hobby for me, and it has been really, really enjoyable.
That's great. Now, for people who aren't birders, and that's a real thing, a very passionate group of folks, how do you identify what birds are in your yard or your neighborhood?
Well, good question. So I called Jody Willis, who is the president of Duval Audubon Society, and she gave me some tips. So first of all, if you have a pair of binoculars, you need to have them out and have them handy. Even if you're just out in the yard, just kind of hanging out, have your binoculars with you so that when a bird flies into your yard or suddenly you can see them from wherever they were, that you can spot them. Now, if you don't have binoculars, you can set up a bird feeder or a bird bath close by where you can watch them. And Jody says that you can buy bird feed at the hardware store, which is Lowe's, Home Depot, Ace, or Wild Birds Unlimited. But if you can't get out and buy bird feed right now, and I think some people are ordering it, but if you can't do that right now, you can have water out in the yard that the birds can come to. Now, you do want to watch a little bit. If you've got a cat that's a real hunter, you don't want to, you don't want to put bird feeders or water out in your yard because you don't want to, put the bird in a position that it's going to
get eaten by the cat. Sure.
Right. but the pocket parks in my neighborhood are just filled with singing birds right now. So, instead of just walking or riding your bike through the neighborhood, you can kind of slow down when you're near there and watch some of the birds. There are some common species that you can learn. She recommends blue jay, northern cardinal, Carolina wren, catbird, northern mockingbird, brown thrasher, and bluebird. And I would add that what I'm seeing in my yard and neighborhood, I'm seeing owls and eagles and woodpeckers. And so what has really helped me a lot is to go onto YouTube and type in the name of the bird. You can type in like beginning bird call, and that's what we were listening to at the beginning of the segment. But you can type in by name, blue jay call, and it'll pull up.
And you can hear what they sound like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we're almost out of time, but advice for kids who are cooped up at home. What outdoor activities do you recommend for them?
Well, that's why birding is so good for families, because you can work on it together or you can work on it alone. And go to the site Audubon for Kids. They are putting new content all the time, and yet it's still a very clean, user-friendly site. Pick a couple of birds to focus on every week, like pick the blue jay and the cardinal. Those are so easy to spot right now. Learn their calls, and, you know, kids can keep a field notebook where they can do drawings of the birds that they find on YouTube. And, you know, just gradually increase your knowledge of what's going on in your own backyard.
You also say, here's an activity you can do with your kids. Press wildflowers.
Yes, wildflowers are starting to bloom. It's spring. We've got wildflowers. They're even growing in the cracks of, you know, downtown sidewalks. So as you're out on your walk, your kids can pick wildflowers, bring them home, enjoy them, you know, in a jar for a while. And then you can press them in a book. You can press them between wax paper. You can press them between pieces of glass and make a picture. They're starting to be all over the place right now.
And then, of course, scenic drives have really made a comeback. Lisa likes Heckscher Drive. That's certainly one of the most beautiful drives in the area. You can get out.
Well, and especially during full moon, and it's full moon this week.
So, yes, there's going to be a big moon tonight.
Yes, if you're driving down Heckscher Drive, you know, as you cross Nassau Sound, you've got the Atlantic Ocean on one side, Nassau Sound on the other. You've got the white sands of Huguenot Beach on the other. Under a full moon, it is just beautiful. Also, our boat ramps are still open, and our state and our national forests are open. The trailheads aren't, but the roads through the forest are open.
So there you go.
Opportunity for scenic drive there.
Lots of ways to still enjoy nature. She's Lisa Gruba. It's Wild Florida here on the show regularly. And thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you, Melissa.
I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Keep calm and flatten the curve as we get through this together. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.